You're listening to NativeTalk.net. Audio files are available online at NativeTalk.net.
What started as a little experiment turned into a monolithic monster, and we're on the loose in your neighborhood.
Be a part of the program by emailing us, podcast@NativeTalk.net. And now, your hosts Cliff and Brandon. Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.
Good morning and thank you for joining us today on the NativeTalk.net radio podcast. The email, if you want to be a part of the show, is podcast@NativeTalk.net. And you can always call and drop us a line. The message line is 970-278-5791.
Now, Brandon, is that like a text message or
no? That's my home phone that I don't.
Wait, do you have an actual answering machine?
It's a voicemail.
Does it have like those little tapes that you put inside?
No, it's voicemail.
Oh, boo.
You leave a message and I can like, and I receive a note on my actual cell phone that somebody left a message so that I know to go listen to it. And if it's interesting, I'll actually play it on the air.
Ah. Dude, you know what is interesting was that lead-in music. You should send me a copy of that. That sounded awesome.
Yeah, it's called a Mic Mac song.
Yikes. Do you ever take my advice and maybe take some time before the show to practice pronunciations?
No, because I didn't think anyone would ask me the name of that particular song.
Ah, well, be that as it may, it's still pretty cool. I'll take a copy.
I will send that over to you. Now, you just recently bought a house. How long did you live in your current...
I did!
How long have you lived in your current home renting?
So I've rented this home for the longest of any home since I've turned 18. I've been here for 5 years now.
And did your rent ever go up in that period of time?
Not a single time.
How would you feel if it did? Like, let's say your landlord came to you and you've been renting this place for 5 years... And your landlord says, hey, I'm sorry, buddy, but, you know, the economy's going up. We're going to have to raise your rent by $30.
Yeah. I mean, so I would feel like, the crap do you mean? We had an agreement. Like, we signed up on this, blah, blah, blah. And I'd feel really mad. But what happened was I researched comparable homes in my own area to see what the prices of those are, and I realized that my rent, which hadn't gone up in 5 years, was on average $300 less than other homes in comparable condition in my same area.
So how about this? Okay.
So I basically, to answer your question, I would be like, oh yeah, $30, that totally makes sense. And
okay,
go with it.
If you were angry about it, how would you respond?
I would respond immediately in the moment with anger. When the conversation happened that I was gonna pay more, I would at that moment be like, what are you talking about? I would right away start on the phone, begin, I don't know, getting belligerent and just start getting mad right away. So vocally, I don't know.
Okay.
Does that answer your question? What was the question?
It does. It was, okay. How would you respond if you were angry about your rent? Well, Wisconsin...
It would be like I get red in the face and sound like... Rah, 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 rah.
Well, in Wisconsin, 37-year-old Jason Tilley, his landlord showed up and told him that he was raising the monthly rent by $30.
He showed up in person?
Yeah.
Wow, that's ballsy.
To tell him? And
no,
why
I mean,
is that?
Send a letter or a phone call if you don't want to get shot. Don't show up on dude's property being like, give me money.
Okay. Well, the way Tilly responded is his rent was $560. So wow. He showed up to pay his rent and paid $560. And the landlord said, no, no, no. You still owe me $30. We raised the rent. We talked about this. Which angered him. Okay. Next sentence of the story. The landlord's body was then found in Tilly's garage the next day, wrapped in a blanket and a single gunshot wound to the back of his head.
Goddamn. I don't know why you're laughing about that. That's
because
a pretty serious situation.
Because that is a horrible overreaction. Who overreacts that way? And I can't believe that you called it. Really?
Somebody who can't afford another 30 bucks is who reacts that way.
The landlord's car was later found about 7 miles away. Police obtained surveillance footage, which they say shows Tilly getting out of the car and catching a bus. If you're going to move the vehicle, don't be caught on surveillance camera, guy.
Well, I mean, it's either that or walk 7 miles. This is America. We don't have to exercise. Come on.
Police questioned Tilly, and he admitted that when the landlord looked away, Tilly shot him in the back of the head using a pistol that he typically carries in his pocket.
Because why not? I mean, I can't afford $30 extra a month in rent, but this pistol is all paid for. No worries here.
Tilly then allegedly rolled the corpse for money and his car keys and drove to Walmart to buy new clothes.
Maybe some new bullets, too, because he probably had the last ones on layaway.
And then, here's the best part of the story, he then drove to a facility where he provided a urine sample for his probation officer and then to a bar to have some shots.
Right. It's got all this extra cash. Why not?
I mean, that's what you do after you just got done murdering somebody, right?
I know. I would need a drink after that.
All right. Let's talk some Native American ancient life. All right.
Okay.
Now, in general, what do you know about the Plains Indians? What was life like in the olden times of what's now the Great Plains region?
As far as I know, there was just a massive amount of buffalo just everywhere. And there, it was like so plentiful, but it would migrate. And so the tribes learned to migrate with them because you could get everything you need just from the herd of buffalo.
And why was the buffalo so important?
Well, it was everything that you needed to live was provided by them. All their bones, their stomachs in order to make pots. They had the skins and the just everything that you needed to stay warm and stay fed was provided by the buffalo. So that's why they were so important.
It's interesting that you it's interesting you bring that up because I have one on that specifically if I can.
But the other thing I remember, the other thing I remember was that it was primarily the women who were hauling the camp. They would basically just roll their camp up and put it on their backs and walk it. And the men would be out chasing the buffalo and hunting and whatnot.
So were they like nomadic then, are you saying?
And again, you're kind of generalizing the plains. So I'm like, overall, yeah, but there's exceptions to that.
Well, some of them did. Some wandered the plains in search of food. Others did settle down and grow crops. They spoke different languages, but they had a communication that would bind them together. They communicated with hand signals, smoke signals, mirror signals, and even pictographs.
That's cool. So even though they spoke different oral languages, they had kind of like a way to communicate between each other in a language everyone understood.
Yes, exactly. That's the way I understood it. Now, you mentioned buffalo, and I wanted to talk about why buffalo were so important to the Plains Indians, because you're absolutely right. That's kind of what you think of when you think of them. There's buffalo everywhere. Now, there were many tricks to catch the buffalo. Now, just off the top of your head, if you've ever seen a buffalo, those things are giant.
Yeah, you're not. It's not going to be like Clifton riding the whale. All right, this is going to go much more violently.
So, how would you catch the buffalo if you had to come up with a? I mean, you got a tribe, right? You're not trying to catch it by yourself. You've got a tribe of folks, but you're all sitting together, coming up with a strategy to get them.
Yeah.
What would you come up with?
Okay, first off, I'm intimidated as blank. Those things are big, all right? and I don't know. I don't know how they took them down. I know that, like, bullfighting in Spain, they use spears and swords and stuff. But for natives, I mean, if it was me, I would either try to use a net or a spear.
Okay, well, in the old days, before they had the horse, because obviously things are easier when you introduce horses.
Oh, maybe I could run them off a cliff.
You got it.
I got it?
I can't believe it. You got it. That's what they did.
because you said, you know, in the old days before the horse, and all of a sudden I was like, oh, well, nets and spears are out. That's not going to happen. What am I going to lay a trap for them? And then I'm like, oh, wait, I can use the terrain. I can use the land and kill them with that.
I am really proud of you, not Jason, Brandon.
Jason, Jesus Christ. My hair is a different color, all right?
Yeah, they would run them off cliffs. Another way they tricked buffalo was to have some of the men dress up in buffalo skins and make crying sounds, which wow. mimicked a lost baby buffalo. And when a real buffalo, when a real buffalo left the herd to hurry over and save what they thought was a baby buffalo in trouble, they would jump up and kill the animal with spears and arrows.
Surprise. Yeah, dude, like, how would you like to be the first one to practice that? Like, no one knows if this is gonna work, and it's like, hey dude, I got an idea.
What if they all come over and like trample me? Or what if they come over and they get really ticked off that you're not a baby buffalo?
And poor buffalo, can you imagine the surprise? You think you're gonna come be like a foster mom and, you know, come rescue this child, and why are you stabbing me?
So these ideas did work, but obviously they were not nearly as successful as hunting on horseback. That was pretty much the ultimate way to go there. Now, in Sioux culture, if we're talking Sioux specifically, a boy was allowed to hunt his first buffalo at the age of 10. That's,
holy moly.
That's when you become a man at 10 years yeah. old.
No
now,
doubt.
To a young boy, a buffalo stands 6 feet tall and weighs as much as 10 grown adults. Now, buffaloes wow. don't see very well, but they do run very fast. Just, I mean, can you imagine a 10-year-old boy, how he would feel getting ready for his first kill?
Dude, I can barely imagine how I, a 30-year-old man, would feel getting ready for my first buffalo kill.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I can't even put my shoes in my 10-year-old self, you know what I mean? Like, I can't even fathom that.
Oh, and you know, because he's not out there by himself. He's got,
no,
you know,
no.
his dad, his uncles, his, you know, other fellow warriors and stuff. And they're all gathering around him, yelling, getting the buffalo to run. And they, and so they're like riling him up. Come on, man, get him, get him. And each boy would have picked out one buffalo to kill. Now, with his bow and arrow, in the midst of all this racket, a 10-year-old boy was expected to at least attempt to kill. And there was no dishonor if he was not successful, but he had to try.
Yeah, because that's a big target, dude. That's pretty intimidating to take that down. But it sounds a little bit like they're at least prepping him. You know, they're warming him up, getting him used to it, sort of thing.
Yeah, it reminds me of, you know, learning to dig gooey ducks when our boat captain, he's like, get down there, just do the best you can. You know, nobody gives you crap if you come up with, I don't know, six green.
Right. For example, just a random number, no significance there.
Yeah, I mean, if somebody did only come up with six, they would be kind of a loser.
Somebody. Jesus.
But no shame in it, man. At least you went down there for an hour and a half.
Who's
and
you?
Tried.
Why are you saying me? This was somebody, right?
Right. So this fictional somebody went down for 90 minutes searching.
Okay, it was more like 35, hypothetically. You know,
for gooey ducks.
Fictionally 35.
And even though everyone else says they're everywhere down there.
No, that is not the story. You're mixing days up, hypothetically. You know.
So hypothetically, what would this sucky person have as an excuse?
Anyway, why are we talking about gooey ducks anyway? I don't know why this devolved into this completely fictional and not at all real story.
Because
about somebody who dove for only 35 minutes on a really hard day in winter when everyone else was coming up with very few pounds, and even the best diver on the boat still only got 3 cages and an hour and a half dive. Hypothetically, you know.
You know, anyway. You know what I hear? Excuses.
Yeah, I've gotten better. Or someone has gotten better since then.
All right. Well, as you know, the buffalo provided nearly everything to the Plains people that they needed. They used all the parts. When they killed a buffalo, absolutely nothing was wasted. They used the hide for teepee coverings, bedding, clothes, moccasins, robes. Buffalo hair was used for rope, halters for the horses. Hooves were used for rattles. Horns were used to make dishes and spoons and ladles. And from various parts, they made whips, saddle pads, glues, drums, toys, belts, shields, knife cases, boats. And, of course,
wow,
coming in way, way after all that stuff is food.
Right. It's funny that the one thing everybody would think of from a buffalo would be, like, you know, the last thing the natives would need.
Because right?
all the other stuff is like, you only get a couple of horns per buffalo. You get hundreds of pounds of meat.
Now, as Chief Kicking Bear of the Kiowas explained back in 1865, he said that the buffalo is basically our money. It's our only resource that we have to buy what we need and do not receive from the government. The robes we can prepare and trade, and we love them just as much as the white man loves his money. Yeah. Just as it makes a white man's heart feel to have his money carried away, that's how we feel to see others killing and stealing our buffalo, which was given to us by the great father above to provide us with meat to eat and the means to get the things we wear and everything else we rely on.
And what was such a gut punch for me when I was taking that history course was, first they set us up by learning in intricate detail all of the things you just described. You know, we got to see pictures of the tools that they would build from the buffalo, and we got to hear detailed stories, and we even got to see some of the stories that they would draw or they would paint on the buffalo hide that they would roll out every winter and have, you know, discuss their history as a people. And that was through buffalo hide. We got to hear about all the benefits. And then they went and told us about the railroad and how people were paid what was it called, a buffalo nickel or whatever? Is that where the term mm-hmm. came from?
I don't know the history behind that, but possibly
to stick your gun out the window of a moving train and just fire at buffalo and just leave them dead, you know, just leave them out there. They would just, hundreds of people driving by in the trains would be just shooting buffalo all day long. And the goal was to do what you said. Like, just like if you're trying to starve out an enemy in a castle, you cut off their food supply and their water supply. That's what they were doing. They were trying to kill natives by killing buffalo.
That's messed up, dude.
It just feels like it makes me sick to my stomach that was the attitude. That Native Americans were so, what's the word here? Like they wanted to kill us so bad they were willing to go after our food source.
Well, that's, yeah, like you said, that's what they were trying to do, because they wanted the land.
That's exactly why. Well, yeah, and you know, we weren't giving it up, not willingly.
Would you? I wouldn't.
No, not even today. I would still stand on it if it was possible.
Just think about somebody coming to take your home, you know, your family, your livelihood. I'd fight to my last breath, and that's what they were doing.
Yeah.
It's incredibly sad. Well, when we come back from a break, which we have to take in just a second.
Heavy note to go out on a break.
Well, what am I going to do, you know? I'm going to tell a funny joke.
I liked the crickets. That was a better sound.
I got sounds.
Oh my, yeah, you got lots of buttons there.
Hold on, let me write something down.
Yeah, what's your writing down over there? What's that note?
I'm writing down that divers find unprecedented Native American burial site off the coast of Florida.
Ooh.
Don't worry, I have a plan. I saw this in a movie about a bus that had to speed around the city, keeping its speed over 50. And if its speed dropped, it would explode. I think it was called The Bus That Couldn't Slow Down.
All right, so when we come back from break, hopefully that lightened the mood a little bit. Thank you, Brandon, for that.
I'm here for you all. You can trust in me.
All right, so we are going to talk about divers finding a Native American burial site off the coast of Florida when we come back in just a minute with more stimulating Native Talk Radio right here at nativetalk.net. Hi, this is Cliff.
And this is Brandon.
And this is the NativeTalk.net radio podcast. The greatest podcast ever produced. Whoa,
wait a minute. What?
What do you mean?
I'm pretty sure we're not the greatest podcast ever produced. I mean, have you heard of Serial?
No.
Cracked Podcast?
No.
Or Surprisingly Awesome?
No. Okay. The NativeTalk.net radio podcast. The greatest podcast ever produced that I have actually listened to. So visit us online at nativetalk.net and tell your friends to download a few shows because, well, apparently we need it.
Yeah, if you ever want to measure up with podcasts that are actually good, like The Bugle with John Oliver or WTF with Mark Maron or
Heart. Get out to the forest. And discover the wonders of nature with your family, just like Blue, Jewel, and the whole Rio flock.
Let the kids connect to their roots. It's going to be so much fun.
Yeah! Woo-hoo!
Let's rock this jungle.
Yeah! Fresh air.
What a glorious morning.
Clean water.
Woo-hoo! This is great!
And endless surprises.
Yo, this is untapped territory.
How amazing.
Visit discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Someday, we'll be divided into two groups, those who listen to NativeTalk.net radio and those who never listen to anything else. Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.
Welcome back to the program. The message line, if you want to call in and drop us a line, 970-278-5791, or visit us on Facebook, facebook.com/NativeTalkRadio. Make sure you like our page and share our posts. We also, on occasion, post videos of us doing the show.
Wait, what?
I said on occasion we post videos of us doing the show.
Do you notify me before you're recording me?
Sometimes.
I constantly have pencils in my nose and rubber bands on my eyes. What are you doing here?
That's entertainment for the folks, Brandon.
No, you have to let me know. You can't just do that.
It's entertainment for the folks, Brandon.
I don't think I consented.
You, who needs consent?
Squeak means squeak.
All right, so now in 2016, imagine this. You're diving, okay? You're out there having a good time, and you notice what could be human remains resting on the seafloor. You see basically a skull, some, a femur, and you're like, and you're talking only 21 feet, which, as you well know, isn't that deep. You know, you're just barely floating along there. And you're like, dude, why is there a skull here? How would you feel or react?
Honestly, my first reaction would be some kind of wonder. Like for real, I would look at it and be like, whoa, are you serious? And I would probably go down there and start looking at it. And then the next thing I would think of is I have to notify somebody.
Would you bring it up?
No, I would leave it where it's at.
Okay. Well, this
because if it's anything with evidence, the act of me bringing it up, if it's because my first thought is it's some kind of murder and someone's dumping. You said I'm off the coast of Florida.
Yes.
Yeah. Everybody's got a boat that lives near the coast in Florida. Anybody could be out in 20 feet of water. That's usually 20 feet's pretty close to shore there. And it could be somebody who just got a body dumped. So my first thought is I don't want to contaminate a crime scene or get rid of any possible evidence. Let's get somebody who is a police diver down here to take a look at these remains.
Honestly, that is very good thinking. This particular diver did bring it up and turned it in, and it looked like it was a barnacle-crusted jawbone. So it was obvious that this had been down there for quite some time. And
when I was thinking of mine, I was thinking like a bleached white skull, you know, like a barnacles for sure. Now I feel a little bit different, yeah.
So it hasn't been recent, at least. And as they start researching the area, they find that it covers 3,000 square meters, or about 32,000 square feet, which is a pretty seriously large area. And as they look into the bones, they find out that they're not recent at all. They're like thousands of years old.
Wait. This one bone skeleton was spread across 3,000
square
meters?
No. They found bunches of them, like hundreds of them.
Oh!
Okay?
Hundreds of them.
Hundreds. Underwater archaeologist Ryan Duggins from Florida's Bureau of Archaeological Research says, we now know that this type of site exists on the continental shelf, basically an ancient Native American burial ground. We're talking 7,000 years old.
Oh, yeah.
It's been preserved underwater since prehistoric times. So this is not like gone underwater recently. This has been underwater for thousands of years. Now, this ancient resting place serves as a reminder that the stretched Florida Peninsula was not always as it is today. Millennia ago, the climate was a lot cooler, and Native Americans lived and died on a broader, greater Florida landmass before rising seas swept their homes into history and, of course, covered their burial grounds. So
yeah, and they're predicting in another 100 years the sea level is going to go up like another 10 feet. So all around the world, picture anything that's a coastal area that's, you know, within 10 feet of the sea, well, that's all going to be underwater too.
Now, it was interesting to me the way they discovered how old it was, because when you first pull up a jawbone, I'm thinking like you, somebody dumped this body here, right?
I mean, it's Florida. That's the first place my thought goes.
Right? And they noticed on this skull, the barnacle-encrusted skull, a single tooth was still attached with a really well-worn molar, suggesting that it belonged to somebody who subsisted on much rougher fare than we eat today. Duggins
rougher
told...
Rougher fare? What's that mean?
That means like the things they eat, it like grinds your teeth down more.
Oh, okay. It's like rocks.
Yeah, the underwater archaeologist Duggins says that it's something that we don't ever see in modern populations.
And I don't commonly see people eating rocks.
Well, remember, dinosaurs would eat rocks.
Well, those aren't people.
Don't cows eat rocks, too?
That I don't know. I did not know that. I thought that dinosaurs
ate
rocks.
No, maybe that's crocodiles. I think that's crocodiles.
No, I think they just put their children in their mouth.
Well, anyway, Duggan says that it was an instant indicator that they were dealing with a likely prehistoric individual. And
a serial murderer.
Yes. They found broken arm bones, pieces of skulls, a collection of carved wooden stakes, textiles, which is like clothes and stuff, and radiocarbon dust were able to confirm that they're somewhere in the neighborhood of 7,000 years old. Now, at least six complete individuals from this hunter-gatherer society have already been recovered, but they're expecting to find much more because their research is only in the early stages and the burial site is just massive. So they're hoping to find
32, you say 32,000 square feet?
Yeah.
Yeah. Whew.
Especially underwater. That's not so easy. My question was, how on earth is this stuff surviving underwater? I mean, we're talking salt water.
Well, yeah, but it's buried underneath sediment and stuff too, right?
I'm assuming. I mean, so... it must have been. But how did he find it? Just, you know, diving around. It's not like you go down there with a shovel.
Well,
digging
it's
around.
Be partially... The ocean floor is moving around constantly, so things are going to get buried and uncovered just like in a desert, right? Like you picture a desert sand dune getting blown by the wind and how they travel. Well, the ocean floor is doing the same thing on a constant basis, but once something gets buried down there, it's not going to degrade like something that's in the air by the ocean, because like the salt water mixed with the ocean air, like the air plays a big part in degrading things and breaking them down as well. So when it's buried under the water and on the sediment and nothing's causing friction, no waves are pushing on it, and it's just under the dirt, I could totally see things getting preserved down there.
Well, the answer could come from the other side of the Florida Peninsula, which is called the Wendover Archaeological Site. Now, this was discovered back in the 1980s, and it's an ancient muck pond where they discovered skeletal remains of 168 individuals from a similar thousands and thousands of year ago area, and they were preserved in peat at the bottom of the pond. Now, what they're thinking is that this new site is the same kind of burial place where the ancient ancestors of Florida's natives interred their dead by lowering them into an inland freshwater pond. So they kind of buried them in the pond already, so they're under the dirt, and then when the seawater comes up, they're already under there. That's what they're thinking.
Yeah, I'm having a problem with the fact that you knew exactly how many skeletons were in the peat moss there. Because once you find one and you know that they're ancient people that are buried there, what are you doing digging them up?
I don't know. They should just leave them there.
Like if I walk into a colonial graveyard and like I see a bone sticking out, right? Like and I'm in a historic graveyard for colonial armies, and I start testing this bone and I'm like, wow, this bone is 300 years old. Let's see how many there are under here. And I just start digging up graves. Like, am I going to get arrested, or am I going to be applauded?
Well, now that they know about this,
as a harbinger of science,
they are thinking about this, okay? Because while they're trying to learn more about these people and their culture, the authorities are absolutely working in conjunction with indigenous representatives of the Seminole tribe in Florida to make sure that the preserved remains are treated in an appropriate manner. Because
I saw a really great family graveyard from in Oregon about these Oregon Trail people, and I really think that we need to carbon date all of their remains. So I'm going to take a shovel and go dig up this historical landmark so that I can carbon date their bones.
They
and
are
see
working
exactly
with the
ate.
Local tribe. They're
God
working
damn.
With them.
I, makes
look,
me
I'm
mad.
With you, but
stop
they're
counting them. You found a skull. I get it. Don't go back for more.
All right. That will do it for us today. Thank you all, as always, for listening. We'll be back
so
next week with more
this podcast.
With more stimulating Native Talk Radio available online at nativetalk.net. Visit us online, facebook.com, Native Talk Radio for the Facebook page as well. See you guys next week.
This is the NativeTalk.net radio podcast. Okay, let's be honest. If Van Gogh was alive today and he had to listen to the competition, he'd probably cut off the other ear. Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.
I forget the liners I do, so they're new to me.